At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Powered by Insperity.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Will Docker and the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps.
All right, ready to roll on a Saturday morning. Thanks to our friends at Insperity. Visit Insperity.com for a powerful HR solution with exceptional follow-through. You can also get your questions in on X at ESPN 97.5. A lot going on in the world of golf. You got the fourth of eight fall series events going on in Las Vegas. The Shriners, ton of wind, ton of delays. We'll get to that with Charlie and how you can manage your game in those kind of conditions. You also have the Andalusia Masters going on the DP World Tour where Jon Rahm looking to win his first event as far as the DP World Tour or PGA Tour event is concerned this year. He's only won two live events. A lot of media members don't think Rahm has lived up to his expectations since signing with Liv. We'll get to that. Charlie, great to be in studio with you this morning. How are you?
You know, I'm a little confused because I thought this was football season.
Yeah, yeah, it is, Charlie.
Great, great, great bowl games. Great, I mean, the colleges are right in the mix of it. The NFL is coming on, and golf is almost superseding them.
Yeah, well, it really is, especially with game day in Austin this week. You know who's hosting, who's going to make a pick for game day with Saban and McAfee and the boys, Charlie?
Well, the number one Longhorn guy in the world. I mean, how about this guy?
Television star. They didn't call Roger Clemens. They didn't call Vince Young. They called world number one golfer Scottie Scheffler, Charlie. Gonna make a pick on there for the second time in his career. He made a pick when Texas hosted Alabama in 2022 and barely lost. They play Georgia today. I think Scheffler will be on Texas with the points, minus five.
Oh, sure. He's got so much orange in him. I mean, he is the Longhorn right now, you know, from Ben Crenshaw to Tom Kite.
Spieth's been on game day before. They love the golfers. They love the golfers.
Well, everybody loves golf.
Yeah.
The game is just incredible. And football, you know, these athletes are competitive, and they get a little taste of golf, and they can't stop.
No, they can't. They can't. Now, you see Sauce Gardner, the cornerback for the Jets. I mean, he picked up golf this offseason. He's addicted now, Charlie.
Yeah,
if he's not on the football field, he's on the golf course. So,
right.
No, it's the fastest-growing recreational game. 3.1 million new recreational golfers this year, as we've talked about. So the game's in a great spot. I think Texas wins today. You know, number one total defense. Quinn Ewers came back last week, beat Oklahoma. I think Texas rolls Georgia this week. Let's get to the golf, Charlie. Last week you had Matt McCarty win the Black Desert Championship in the PGA Tour's first return to Utah in over 50 years. It was McCarty's second start as a PGA Tour member. He won three times on the Korn Ferry Tour this year, meaning he automatically earned a full card for the PGA Tour this season. Charlie, he talked a ton about how gaining distance has elevated his game in year four in his pro golf career. Let's hear a little bit more from McCarty on the distance.
Honestly, just like my first year on Korn Ferry, like it was somewhat of a disadvantage, like how far I was hitting it. So I made that like a big focus, you know, the last couple of years of honestly just like I was kind of a late bloomer. So just kind of filling out a little bit more, eating more, started there and working out. I started using like the stack system, you know, a year and a half ago, some speed training stuff. But just putting more of an emphasis on it, and I wanted to do it in a way where I felt like I wasn't losing accuracy and didn't want to, like, change my swing. Like, I've had the same coach, Dave Williams, since I was 12. Like, he's awesome, and we've talked about it, and he's a very old-school guy, and, you know, I don't have a different driver swing than my iron swing. I feel like everything's the same, and to be able to gain distance while also kind of keeping it like that, it's it helps me be able to honestly swing the club freer and play better under pressure.
Charlie, distance, huge part of the game now. McCarty's picked up a lot since college. You just showed me a video of your grandson, Charlie Wiley, hitting a drive 320 yards off the tee, and it looks effortless.
Effortless power instead of powerless effort. But it's just the cycle of what is transformed into an incredible place for the kids to learn how to play golf at such an early age with such good instruction that they turn these kids out early on. I mean, somebody's going to win a tour tournament when he's 15. I mean, it's incredible. It's so much fun to watch. And yes, I'm enjoying watching my grandson and the guys on his team. It's not just one. It's each team has, they can't have any more than 9 players on a team in the NCAA Division I.
New rule this year.
New rule. But all 9 of them are prepared to be number one on their squad. So it's really fun to watch.
No, it is. And college golf is just growing, year to year. You know, we saw this week, the St. Andrews Intercollegiate.
Yes.
You know, that's the second year St. Andrews has put on that event. They hosted Northwestern, Arizona, a couple other schools. Fun to see a course like that, you know, the home of golf, host a collegiate event. I really enjoyed that this week.
Well, that is one thing. But now you're involved in a interesting tournament called the Spirit that brings in kids from all over the world. And look at the amount of professionals that come out of that tournament.
No, it's unbelievable. We have that coming up in just under a month now. That's the Spirit International Amateur Golf Championship. That's November 11th through the 17th. 2024. So we're coming up close to that. It's hosted at Whispering Pines Golf Club. And just as Charlie said, the best players in the world have played in it. Scottie Scheffler, Lorena Ochoa, Jordan Spieth. You were a captain in 2021 for the inaugural Spirit. It's a great tournament. And yeah, we're welcoming another great field this year. The individual who finished second at the St. Andrews Intercollegiate, Cameron Adam from Northwestern, he'll play in the field. He's competing for Scotland. You had another college event on TV earlier this year at the Folds of Honor at
right.
Old American, where you
yes.
were. And the individual who won that, Dominic Clemens from Alabama, he'll represent England at the Spirit. And, we actually have a great group of international players that play their college golf in Texas coming to play. Adela Cernasek is the number one ranked female in France, number 8 in the world, and she'll be representing France for the Spirit. It's a great tournament. You got to come out and watch. You can follow on social media at the Spirit Golf, but come out and watch at Whispering Pines in November. It's great weather. It's a great tournament, amateur golf is just growing repetitively. The captain for Team USA this year is going to be Nathan Smith, and he's going to captain the Walker Cup as well, which. It's kind of like the Ryder Cup of amateur golf. But, yeah, great stuff from top to bottom as far as amateur golf and college golf. Obviously, NIL, has taken over, to some extent. Charlie, have any
deals? To some extent.
Charlie, have any deals lined up, Charlie?
Not that he's sharing with his papa. He's being a freshman, he's played in every tournament so far. So, you know, he'll get his ground, yeah. and he'll be in all that, decision making, you might say. But it's going to be a great Sunday or Saturday in Texas.
Yeah, it is.
Once Longhorn football gets back to number one, everybody in Texas really feels good, even the Aggies.
Yeah, this is the first top five matchup in Austin since 2006. Texas versus Ohio State in 2006. I think Ohio State was number one and Texas was number two. It's back to expectation in Austin, unlike those Cowboys in Dallas, Charlie. They're really struggling. Let's get to a question, Charlie. John Rahm, you know, he's playing over the Andalusia Masters, one of his home tournaments. The media reaction to his season has been interesting. He won twice on LIV, but he's played quite a few DP World Tour events and hasn't gotten it done there. How would you grade Rahm's season since, you know, he left for the LIV Golf Tour? Didn't do much in the majors either.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible, because it changes the whole calendar for him. And the reason why the guys are so good, you know, they play in about 25 to 30 tournaments a year. And they want to win, and they want to win the Masters. They want to win the U.S. Open, the British Open. And now he's got his pockets full. The desire is not there where it once was. And that really hurts his game. And then he got hurt. He had the foot problem, those type of things you don't expect, but they happen in life, that you get hurt off the golf course. So it's a conundrum.
Yeah.
You know, what do they do? What you know, Greg Norman's bowing out. Is he tired of being criticized? I mean, that to me is a troubling situation. They can't come up with a deal, and that's hurting professional golf.
Yeah. It's odd to see Rahm play this time of the year. You mentioned the schedule. You know, Scheffler and Hovland and Rory, they're not playing this time of the year. You'll see Rory and a couple of the other European Tour guys come back and play the European Tour in October and November when their season's winding down and the order of merit is up for grabs. But you look at the PGA Tour right now, and the PGA Tour season in the fall is meant for the guys who are outside the top 60 who are trying to get their cards. And, you know, same situation for the DP World Tour. The top 10 on the DP World Tour at the end of the year get their PGA Tour cards. But and that's most of the guys you're seeing in the field at the Andalusia are kind of outside that top 50 number on the DP World Tour. So it's very odd to see Rahm in the field. But in order to get world golf rankings, he's got to play some of these lower tier DP World Tour events.
That's it, right, because the Ryder Cup's coming up. I mean, everybody's talking Ryder Cup and the cost of the tickets and all that. But now the Europeans have found a way to be able to allow these renegades, you might say, a way into the tournament. And the PGA of America acquiesced to allow that to happen.
Yeah, and as PGA of America proceeds, they made an announcement a couple months ago that they will continue to allow LIV golfers to play in the Ryder Cup and to play in the PGA Championship. So we'll get to a little bit of that, more of that later on. We actually have to take a quick break. This is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour. We'll come back with a couple questions. We'll talk about those ticket prices at the Ryder Cup, and then at 8:30, Jack Randall is going to join the program. Now, Korn Ferry Tour Q School is going on right now. It's something to pay attention to because at the fourth and final stage of Q School, the players who finish top five there will automatically get their PGA Tour cards, and there's a ton of other exemptions along the way. If you don't finish, you know, in the top five at final stage, there's still a ton of status up for grabs as far as Korn Ferry Tour and the Americas Tour. And our friend Jack Randall, who played his college golf at Sam Houston State, he just fired a 64 in the final round of first stage to get to second stage. So we'll catch up with him at 8:30, come back with some questions in the Ryder Cup ticket prices. This is Charlie Epps Golf Hour, presented by Insperity, HR that makes a difference. Back after this.
The Charlie Epps Golf Hour on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Powered by Insperity.
For the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Will Doctor and the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps.
All right, welcome back. Charlie mentioned the Ryder Cup ticket prices in segment one. Let's go over those, hear a little bit of sound from Brian Carnes, the director of championships for PGA of America. Charlie, the ticket prices for the Ryder Cup, here we go. And it's only every 2 years, you know, and this is the Super Bowl of golf. Maybe not equivalent to the Super Bowl, but it is golf Super Bowl, hot commodity event as far as tickets. $255 to attend practice days, $423 to attend Thursday's practice round. And then for the competitive rounds, it is Friday to Sunday, it is $749 per day. And if you have tickets, it is, I believe, if you have tickets for the competitive rounds, it's all you can get as far as food and non-alcoholic beverages. Your thoughts on the ticket prices?
Well, I just paid $8 for a cup of coffee and a blueberry muffin.
Yeah.
Prices are just out of sight. You know, it's inflated prices. The value of our dollar is not as what it once was. New York is the most expensive city in the United States. Yeah. Hong Kong.
I was just up north in Philly, Charlie. I mean, at a concert at is it Wells Fargo Arena in Philly? But yeah, a beer is $28.
Yeah.
So
28.
Yeah. 20.
So the numbers are stretched. I hope they have a series of tickets where it allows the kids in that to be around that environment.
Yeah, Charlie, kids 15 and under practice rounds get in free.
See, that's the PGA is
on
doing
top
its job. Yeah.
Let's hear some audio from Brian Carnes. He's the director of championships for PGA of America. He spoke to SiriusXM PGA Tour this week on how they're setting the ticket prices there.
I mean, we view ourselves as a tier one event that's on par with a World Series or with, you know, an NBA game, an NBA Finals game seven. I mean, that was a part of it. And so, again, when we look at, you know, pricing, we're able to tap into data from all these different venues. Again, you know, our partner in Delaware North, they operate Boston, you know, the Boston Bruins, Boston Celtics, you know, they operate Lambeau Field. We're able to see, hey, what do people pay? What do people, you know, and so that really drove this too. Again, our position in this landscape, where do we feel ourselves? And I think that's the reality. There are people who have the Ryder Cup on their bucket list in the same way that someone would have, you know, a Yankees, you know, opening game World Series on their bucket list. And
yep.
So we, I think, ultimately felt like that's where we are. We've got a lot of people. The demand is at an all-time high for this event. And so we wanted to make sure we priced it appropriately.
So Charlie, I viewed the Ryder Cup as the second best golf tournament in the world behind the Masters. It only happens every 2 years, so fans are hungry for it. Plus, it's at Bethpage in 2025. I mean, talk a little bit about this environment. And it's right down the street from New York City. These fans, I mean, if tickets were $100 a pop, this place would overflow.
Oh, yes. No, the market drives the price of tickets. And also what they have to do to transform the Bethpage golf course into a major venue. So the setup is incredible. So the logistics of all that, it's not profit. Sure, the PGA of America, it's their property, and we're going to gain from it. But 99% of the ticket goes to run the event.
Yeah.
Period.
Did Angel ever play a U.S. Open in Bethpage?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so did Blaine, my other student. And Bethpage is an incredible golf course. And a good friend of mine won it, Lucas Glover.
'09.
And it was the year that Angel won the Masters. So we had great celebrations. And it's a great golf course. It's a demanding golf course. And if it's raining, you know, it's really long. So the fall weather up in New York, it won't be snowing, I don't think, like it would be if there is in Rochester. But it's going to be a great event.
And it's public. Bethpage is public, right?
Yeah, they have five golf courses there.
Now, to play Bethpage Black, the marquee course, you got to do a little bit of camping, right?
Yeah.
If you're going to get a tea time there.
Yeah, they go 2 o'clock in the morning and wait for the doors to open. And then they go back and sleep in their car. People just love to do that because it's a shrine. Yeah. You can't play Augusta, but Bethpage is the Augusta of public golf courses. Yes.
Charlie, no one's playing Augusta right now. Did you see some of the damage they took from Milton?
I know they did get damaged, yeah, but I didn't see it.
I saw some of the drone shots. A lot of trees down. The trees to the right of 12 Green you know, just completely fell on top of the green. And there was a lot of other, you know, fairways, greens. I mean, there was a lot of trees down. Magnolia Lane covered with trees. But it doesn't look like they're going to have any issue getting that golf course ready for the tournament.
If any course can handle this kind of a problem, Augusta can. Not only that, they immediately gave $5 million to help the disadvantaged that get, you know, no electricity and so on. So yeah. So Augusta steps up in many different ways, but $5 million right there so they could help some people.
Wow, that's more than the U.S. government's giving to Asheville, probably, as far as the hurricane recovery is concerned. They're not doing a thing about it, Charlie. Not near enough. A lot of people still struggling.
You know, it's reality, and you know, with Mother Nature, you never know what's going to happen, and it's hit them hard. This is, you know, like Florida, that was two major hurricanes in a year.
Yeah,
and we suffer the same thing in the Gulf Coast, Houston. Yeah. So. We just got to handle it.
Yep. Let's get to a question here. This comes from Nate. Charlie, I'm in Vegas this weekend watching the Shriners and playing some golf out here. I didn't expect it to be 55 degrees and 35-mile-per-hour winds, but that's the forecast all weekend. Any advice for managing ball flights in the wind?
Well, number one, it's the adage, swing easy when it's breezy. You know, the guys will tone their golf court, their golf speeds down, and they'll hit three-quarter shots. They won't hit many full shots, but they'll handle it. They're still going to come up with a 64, 65. You know, it's amazing how good they are. I mean, this is a good test for a lot of – there's good wind players and there's not. Yeah. And if you're a wind player, you're going to get up every morning and lick your chops.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked a little Angel at the end of last week. He had a good finish.
How about that?
Yeah, there at the SAS Championship last week.
Yes,
played well on Sunday.
Yeah, got finished fourth.
Yeah,
birdied four of the last six.
He's trending.
Yeah, he's trending. I'm really proud of him. He's gotten up off the floor and has made a great comeback. I respect him for that. Everything that he's doing is the right way, and so it's almost, you know.
There hasn't been many tournaments this year since his comeback where he has finished outside the top 10.
Yeah.
He got a win at the European Tour, the senior European Tour match play, and it seems like every Champions Tour event, he's right up there.
Yes, right.
I can't wait for the major season, Charlie. Augusta. Cabrera back at Augusta. I'm fired up, to say the least. Let's get to another question. This is Lucas. Charlie, I was working on pitching from 50 to 100 yards with my instructor this week. I've always adjusted distances based on energy I feel I put behind the ball, but my instructor wants me to start using a clock system and adjust the length of my backswing for pitch shots depending on the yardage. How do you approach these shots?
I'm a field player. I use a lot of hands, and also I'll grip down on the club. You know, I'll take it almost down to the steel.
Wow.
And to hit a 60, 70, 80 yard shot. And then I don't use a sand wedge. I'll use a pitching wedge because the spin it gets you in trouble, especially into the wind. You'll spin it too much. So there's little tricks to the trade. And the old timers, you know, that grew up, Paul Runyon, he says, you just keep it quail high. Say, quail high, just right there and bounce it in there. And you don't expect it much, you know. Make it a few 20-footers instead of trying to hit it in there 3 feet. Because if you're trying to hit it 3 feet, you're going to spin it a lot, and you could spin it off the green.
Do you make any adjustments there as far as where the pin is, a front pin or a back pin?
Oh, sure. Downwind pin, into the wind pin, left to right. You know, those are things that you have to calculate into your equation.
Yeah. We'll take a couple more questions after our interview with Jack Randall here at 8:30. He's going to join us in 5 minutes. And once again, Jack Randall just got through first stage of Korn Ferry Tour Q School with a final round 64. Incredible. We're going to talk to him about that at 8:30. Charlie, before we do that, how about a word from your good friends over at Insperity?
Insperity, a company that was started in 1986. Four gentlemen had an idea, especially one, Mr. Sarvati, on HR, taking care of people, grow that industry, because he knew what was coming. He knew government regulations were going to be coming and it make it complicated, not for the big companies, but for the small companies. So if you're a small business and you really want some information on how to manage and what you should do for HR, give Insperity a call, and they will send out their experts. And now they've gone, since 1986, they've grown to $7 billion. So you know they're doing something right. And that's because they know how to treat people. And I've been with them, you know, almost since day one. They're my friends. I've learned from them, the tournaments they run. But the bottom line is knowing how to treat your people. And that's what that Insperity is all about.
And visit Insperity.com for better HR performance as far as your business is concerned. We got to take a quick break. On the other side, former Sam Houston State star Jack Randall joins us. He's getting started on his pro career and his journey to the PGA Tour. He'll share more of that with us as he just made it through the first stage of Q School once again with a final round 64. Can't wait to hear more about that from Jack. We got to take a quick break. This is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, presented by Insperity, HR that makes a difference. Back after this.
You're listening to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Powered by Insperity.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Will Doctor and the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps.
All right, welcome back. We now welcome Jack Randall on the program. Jack is a former Sam Houston State golf superstar. He was part of Sam Houston's team that won conference in 2021. And last week, he just qualified for second stage of Q School after rounds of 69, 69, 70, 64. What a final round that was at Indian Springs in Oklahoma. Jack, thanks for spending some time with us this morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys? Thanks for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure, and it's neat to see you doing what you're doing with that golf club. I mean, that's really exciting, and now you're going to go into the professional ranks. But one thing that you had to do early on in your career is pick a university where you wanted to play and learn. And how did you pick Sam Houston?
Well, I picked Sam Houston because I'm from the Woodlands, Texas, so it was pretty close by. And actually, my older brother did the professional golf management program up there. So I always knew that they had a pretty good program, and the coach was really turning things around, and the coach kept calling me and asking what I'm doing and what I'm working on and telling me what they're working on, and he was just really involved and wanting to know what I'm doing and why I'm doing it, and I could just tell he was going to be a really good coach, and he really cared for his players and what we were working on and really how to make us better. And one of the main things that he told me was he's not trying to create a good golf team. He's trying to create people who want to become professional golfers, because he was one at one point, and he's a good player himself. So I was like, that sounds great. So I went ahead and went there.
And when you were in high school, what were your coaches like in high school, your last 2 years? Were they very helpful to you?
A little bit. I mean, my coach in high school was more of a, he had a lot of information, but it just depended on if he asked him for it or not. So, it got to my junior and senior year, and I really wanted to play in college, and I'd kind of been trending in the right direction, but I knew I needed to take a big step. So I really reached out to my coach in high school just to, like, after we would play 9-hole qualifiers and stuff, I would basically ask him what I needed to do to get better and why I kept doing the things I was doing. And then he would really help me. But, for the most part, if you didn't ask, you didn't get he didn't get a whole lot of information, and I really took it upon myself to reach out to him and get extra practice and really figure it out between him and I. And but yeah, he was very helpful.
Jack, you've played some sensational golf over these first two stages of Korn Ferry Tour qualifying school. You finished eighth at pre-qualifiers and then tied for third last week at first stage. How are you preparing physically and mentally for the long run that Q School is?
Mainly just I had been trending really well over this past summer on a local mini tour. So I knew I was headed in the right direction. I just needed to be able to put 2 and 3 rounds together. I made 8 cuts in a row on the mini tour, so I knew I was doing a lot of the right stuff. I just needed to take that next step to really figure out how to put 3 and 4 rounds together. So I had been trending, and I had really, throughout the summer, just did a lot of process of elimination, trying to figure out what worked and why it was working. And really just working on the right things. Just working on the right things and making sure my body's in shape to be able to perform the same thing over and over again, and then really just have a deep understanding about why it works, and why it works, and make sure to keep doing that, I guess.
Now, Jack, you were, I believe it was last year, you were caddying in Q School for Will Holcomb, another great player out of Sam Houston State. What did you take away from that experience that's maybe helping you out now as you go through these stages?
Definitely. It was actually a huge experience, because I got to see what those players were doing in their practice rounds, and I got to see what they were doing for practice, and honestly, just see the standard that they held themselves to. And in my mind, I was watching them, and I just saw they just didn't make any mistakes. They were really trying to chip, like genuinely trying to chip balls in and not worrying about not making up and down. And they just hold themselves to a different standard. And I took a lot of that into this season. And it was fascinating to watch. And I really did learn a lot of just how they conduct themselves. They don't speak negative to themselves at all, because there's just no point in doing that, and it never helps, and it wastes energy. And they were all, even if the round wasn't going their way, they just seemed very calm in the storm, and just made sure to just not get frustrated and just follow their game plan. And it seems like they could be 3 over or 4 over and they would still make the same decisions and just allow the odds to fall their way. And yeah, they were just super composed, and Will was great too, and being positive to himself, even when things weren't going well, he'd be really, really positive to himself, almost to the point where he would fake it, and then all of a sudden he'd get a couple putts a drop, and he'd get some momentum his way, and then I'm like, wow, we really turned this thing around. So a lot of it was mindset, and a lot of it was they knew exactly what they needed to do to perform, and I took that upon myself to kind of figure out my own way about what works for me and what doesn't, and they did all sorts of different drills and all sorts of different stuff, and it was really fascinating to see.
You know, one of the highest paid athletes in the world now is a golfer.
Really?
Well, Scottie Scheffler made $63 million in a period of about 10 weeks.
Yeah, that'll work. I wonder what that is per minute or per hole, because that is
a lot.
That is a lot to just whack a golf ball around. And well, yeah, that's pretty fascinating.
Are you into professional golf for the notoriety or for the cash?
No, honestly, I just love the challenge of it. Like, I mean, obviously the cash is great, and the notoriety is great, but for me, I just love the challenge on trying to perfect my craft and what I'm doing and why it works, and just just honestly the mental challenge of knowing you need to perform every week, and it's the most satisfying thing in the world, the most fulfilling thing in the world when it works out. And when it doesn't work out, I just really like trying to solve the puzzle, honestly.
Jack, what does a day of practice look like for you at a time right now when you're playing so much tournament golf? What does the day-to-day look like?
Starts out, I be sure to do a lot of extra putting in college. In college, I mean, you hear all throughout your life, short game and putting is gonna make you the money, and you drive for show and putt for dough. And I was always like, yeah, well, you still got to drive it in the fairway. And I really spend probably about an hour and a half to 2 hours on putting, but not necessarily. I mean, I work on a lot of fundamentals to make sure I've figured out that everything comes from setup. So I really work as much as I can on setup, whether it's recording from the front and from the back and trying to really make sure it's a sound fundamentals to start with, because a lot of times that sets you up for that sets you up to do what you want to do without even needing to work on your putting stroke. So I work on a lot of fundamentals from putting to chipping and to full swing. And then for the most part, I do a lot of external practice of knowing when I am set up correctly, I try to put all of my focus on the putt in front of me instead of working on fundamentals. Because when you're on the golf course, you can't be worried about, I'm taking the putter inside, I'm taking the putter outside. I really try and put my focus on externally on where I'm trying to hit it, and I set up to that point and go. And then for the most part, I'll do some short game, work on fundamentals and work on the basic chips that I need, and then work on my wedges and my short irons. And then for the most part, I spend a lot of my practice out on the course. I'll go play 9 holes or 18 holes, whether I get a game with some buddies or I go out there by myself and play 2 balls. And if I hit a shot I don't love, I re-hit it. And most of the time I try to play the hole with 2 balls and kind of play 2 different types of shots throughout the hole, just so I feel like I'm working on, if there's water on the left or water on the right, I really work on trying to control my golf ball and have really good ball control. Because if you have really good ball control, you're not going to have to chip as much. And if your chipping's really good, then it frees you up to do whatever you want on your second shot. So, I really just work on a lot of fundamentals and ball control and make the up and downs when I need to.
Well, that's really impressive, what you're going through. What is your age?
I'm 25.
25. You're really right at the start of a great career. And your mindset is really pretty impressive. I've talked to a lot of young people, and you're about as thorough as they come. So when you get up on the first tee at Augusta, what's going to be your mindset?
Well, first tee on Augusta, hopefully I can feel my hands. I would say I would take the Tiger approach and just not hit it in the bunker and smoke it way left through the trees. But I would honestly say my approach would be line up 2 feet inside that bunker on the right and just cover it and just try to hit that left side of the fairway. Draw is my dominant shot shape, so I would, depending on the nerves, I'd probably line up left edge of that bunker and just swing as hard as I can and try not to have it go too far left.
Jack, when do you find out where you play second stage?
So I'll find out November 3rd. Due to the hurricane, there's a first stage in Florida that was delayed. Yeah. So I also did kind of go to one of the beginning first stage sites, so they still have to finish all the other first stages. So November 3rd is when I find out where I'll go, and then 4 out of the 5 dates for second stage are December 3rd through the 5th. So I have a fairly decent idea on when I would be playing.
And everyone can follow along that on PGATour.com. Jack, we're out of time here in this segment, but we really appreciate you taking some time on a Saturday morning. letting our listeners get to know you a little bit better. We look forward to talking with you after second stage. Play well, my friend.
Good luck.
Awesome. Thank you very well.
I don't think you need any luck. But, you know, just stay the course. You sound like you know what the hell you're doing. Very good.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'd rather be lucky than good, so I appreciate the luck.
Once again, that is professional golfer Jack Randall. Just made it through first stage of Q School with a 64. Follow along with them on PGAtour.com as they do an excellent job covering the four stages of Q School. Once again, thank you, Jack. We got to take a quick break. On the other side, we'll answer more questions for the golf doctor. This is Charlie Epps, Golf Hour, presented by Insperity. HR that makes a difference. Back after this.
The Charlie Epps Golf Hour, powered by Insperity, continues.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Will Doctor and Charlie Epps.
All right, we'll finish up here with a couple questions. Here's some audio from Joel Dahman. Received a four-shot penalty for too many clubs in the bag. We'll get to that. Let's start with a question. This comes from Jesse. Charlie, just finished up a member guest at a Donald Ross course where every green was elevated, and I had a tough time judging distances. It was an embarrassing performance, to say the least. How do you approach elevated greens?
Well, that's a, you know, it's a really a good question, and you're trying to control the flight of the golf ball, and sometimes you're trying to hit it up too high.
You know, trying to force it up there.
Force it up there, and you got to know, you know, your whole location. Because you can't see the hole, bottom of the hole. That's why, you know, uphill shots are difficult. So you got to get a good yardage. Get a good yardage from your ball to the front of the green and from the front of the green to the hole location. And then you got to be a little more conservative. But also ball position is of the utmost importance. And don't try to make the ball go high. Just let the club take the ball up, you know, these 60-degree wedges. I've never learned how to use one. I've used 58 and open it up slightly. But to me, it's a yardage situation. Know the front of the green yardage from your ball and then from the front of the green to where the hole location. And usually in the Donald Ross golf courses of yesteryear, they're sloped from back to front. So you never want to go long. So you'd rather have a 5-foot putt than try to hit a 3-foot putt that goes to 12 feet.
That's, or furthermore, a chip shot up the hill rather than
a chip pitch, I call it.
Rather than going over the green, having something downhill that runs away
from 50 yards, you can't create enough spin to make it come back that much. But you can get it too far past the hole where now you put three putts into play. So yardage, and it's a delicate touch, and good luck.
what about yardage as far as when you're playing at different times of the day? I was reading some press conferences from the pros in Utah last week, and Patrick Fishburne, he's a PGA Tour member and from Utah, he was talking about how much the distances change from a 8 a.m. tee time versus 2 p.m.
Sure. I mean, that's a fact, and that's why they have morning times and afternoon tee times. And you know, the first 36 holes, you get a morning and then you get, you know, one afternoon. That's pretty fair. That's fair they can do it. And then usually the wind's a lot different in the morning. If it's windy in the morning, it's windy.
Yeah.
And if it's, you know, calm in the afternoon, you're lucky. But wind and lie of the ball. I mean, the PGA golf courses, you know, they're manicured to the nth degree now. Yeah. So you go into another golf course, they don't prepare them like that. So you got little lies that you got to decide how you're going to play them. If the ball's sitting down in the grass, the ball's going to release more. So you got to understand the lie of the golf ball and how much, you know, grass is going to be between your ball and the club face. So there's little things that you got to, you know, look at it 10, 15 seconds, but you don't need more than that.
Yeah.
And then a ball that's down in the grass, it's going to come out and it's going to roll up to the, so it's those decisions that make a good, a good short game player.
Not going to be able to create near as much spin in that rough with grass behind the ball.
No.
Different approach to those shots.
That's right.
As far as the PGA Tour and what's going on this week, Taylor Pendrith leads the way at the Shriners at 10 under par. He won the Byron Nelson earlier this year in Dallas. Played very well at the President's Cup, too, for the Internationals. Got a couple other PGA Tour winners atop there, J.J. Spahn, Davis Thompson, Matt Kuchar is three back. So keep you up to date on the Shriners Children's Open. One name that you're definitely familiar with is Joel Dahmen. He's been featured in the last two golf Netflix series, Full Swing. He was in the first two seasons. A lot of people find him very entertaining. But coming into this week, he was ranked 124th on the FedEx Cup standings. Needed a really good week in Vegas. There's only four events left of the fall series. And if you're not inside the top 125 on the money list by the end of the fall, you lose your PGA Tour card. So a very big name in the world of golf, Joel Dahmen, at risk of losing his PGA Tour card. And, you know, things got worse this week. Dahmen received a four-shot penalty on Thursday for having too many clubs in the bag. Here was his response after the round.
Bizarro. Never happened to me before. I travel with 15, 16 clubs. I think most people out here do, depending on conditions and courses. And, you know, I've been traveling out here for a long time, and it's never happened before. I would like to blame Gino. That'd be the easy thing to do, but it's not actually his fault either. I played Tuesday and Wednesday out here. We didn't see it in there. It was an extra 4-iron. So I had 2 4-irons in the bag. We got to the 4T, and I grabbed a water, and I walked over to my bag, and I saw a 4-iron that was in the wrong spot. And our stuff is always in the right spot, and it wasn't in the right spot. So, yeah, I was, you know, you just want to get so mad, and you want to get mad at everything, but at the same time, you just got to keep playing golf, and I didn't do a great job of that afterwards. It's tough to refocus, and, I mean, I shot one over still if you take those penalties away, which is not very good out here today. So, frustrating, disappointing, but... if you play golf long enough, weird stuff is going to happen out here. I had a lot of people out supporting me today, helping our family foundation. So it was one of those moments where you want to lose it and you want to get mad. You want to be mad at yourself. You want to get mad at Gino. You want to get mad at the world. But you look around and people donated. You know, they're donating a bunch of money to our foundation. And life is not that bad. It's a mistake. It's going to happen. Yeah, it's one of those that you kind of live and learn. And Gino feels terrible. I feel terrible. But we're going to tee it up tomorrow morning and try to make a bunch of birdies. I was testing the 4-iron out in Jackson. So that is, 3 weeks ago? Haven't been home since, so I just don't know how it got in the golf bag. It's one of those weird ones. I have a Cliff Bar that's probably 2 months old in there. There's probably banana that's rotting in that golf bag. There's all sorts of crap in there, but... it's pretty easy typically to find an extra club, and unfortunately we just didn't do it today.
We talked about this at the last Spirit, Charlie. When Rachel Heck started the round with an extra 7-iron in her bag, luckily they found it after the first hole, so it was only a 2-shot penalty, but bad luck for Dahmen. Got to be better. I don't think our friend Jack Randall would be making that mistake.
That's not bad luck. That's just not being prepared. The gentleman that we just had on, he covers all bases. You got to cover all your bases. But I know what Bob Rotella would tell him. Now I'm going to show you how good I really am. You know, he withdrew. Poor guy. No. Continue the mission, and he could have had a run of 4 to 6 birdies like a lot of those guys, and made the cut. You know. One day I triple bogeyed the first hole, and I'm going to the next tee, and I'm just going to say to myself, all right, let's see how good you are. Let's see, forget about this. Let's you know, and I won the tournament. So you got to have that mindset.
And I think he said he was testing 4-irons in Jackson. That was 3 weeks ago. So he played the Black Desert Championship.
He's kind of a lost cannon anyway.
He played the Black Desert last week, possibly with an extra 4-iron in his bag as well. If he hasn't checked his bag in 3 weeks, and yeah, good catch there. I just saw he withdrew. Just wait. You can't waste spots in the field in a fall series event, Charlie. There are so many players on these alternate lists where, you know, they're trying to get into fields, and, you know, to see that is really disappointing, to see him withdraw after that. But, yeah, interesting stuff there. Make sure to check your bag before you you know, tee off on the first hole. 14 clubs, no more. Let's take another question. This is from Pat. Charlie, I'm a golfer that shoots between 90 and 95. I love to just step up to the ball and hit it without thinking about a whole lot, but some of my playing partners tell me a pre-shot routine would help me improve. Any use to that?
100%. Yes. You've got to have a routine prior to executing the shot. And it's got to be the same every time. It's just like Michael Jordan going up to the free throw line. He does the same thing over and over, and it becomes automatic. And the more you can make your pre-shot routine automatic and simple but effective, the better are you going to play, and you can turn that 95 into an 85 real quick. So that's, to me, is so important. My daughter Mimi, I told her I'd give her $1,000 if she could break 100.
Wow.
Okay.
Well, she played at A&M, Charlie.
For her first.
Won the North-South Amateur. What year was it? What age was this? Was this at the beginning?
This was the beginning. And her first high school tournament, she got into a routine that she did it the same way every time. And she broke 100 in her first high school tournament.
Wow.
And she didn't – it went to 82 real quick. So the pre-shot routine is one of the most important things you can do in executing a golf shot, and if you're really into score.
Yeah. Great work today, Charlie. We're out of time here on the Charlie Epps Golf Hour. Thank you, Abigail, behind the ones and twos. Thank you to Jack Randall for joining the show at 8:30. In case you missed that sensational interview, you can find it on Apple Podcasts and Spotify at the conclusion of the show. We'll see you next Saturday. It's Zozo Championship Week in Japan. We'll be back with you. This is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour. This is my Insperity HR that makes a difference.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.